Professional, the podcast where we answer your questions, offer advice, and veer off into many, many tangents.
Oh, yeah.
My name's Tawny Sanchez.
I'm Asia Sanchez.
I am Megan Ueno.
And she is our guest today. So, Megan, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Not really, but I am, I guess, also a podcaster. I have a YouTube channel called The Grumpy Bagel. And that is a knitting podcast that I host that occasionally goes into nerdy stuff and in which I find basically any excuse I can to talk about the Phantom of the Opera as well.
Megan is an INTJ.
Yes, I am.
So you've got two of us today.
Yes.
That's a thing that's happening.
I just really like the way you described yourself just now, because when I was putting out the call for questions for this episode of the podcast, I said that we had a special surprise guest, but the hints were knitting and
BBC
and Phantom of the Opera.
It's like, I can't think of anyone else who fits that criteria.
Kelsey. I was like, I wonder who this could possibly be.
That's kind of a giveaway for me.
Yeah. So, Megan was originally going to fill in for Tawny, since Tawny had, like, a smidge of pneumonia, but Tawny was like, no, I want to be on the podcast if Megan is going to be there. Only she sounded more like, this, no, I want to be on the podcast if Megan is going to be there. Stop making me laugh.
It's actually a really bad idea for me to be on this podcast, because laughing makes it 10 times worse. Every time I laugh, I hack up my lungs.
It's all right. I'll just be less funny. So,
fun as your friend.
That'll be easy for you.
No, I'm hilarious. So, yeah, we postponed it a bit, but I'm sure I'll be editing out a lot of coughing from Beth March over here.
Ouch.
I'm trying so hard to cough right now.
You got to bring the fever down from her head.
She has a terrible thirst, but she won't drink.
Oh, wow. Deep cut. That's a deep cut. So, quick catch up. Tawny, what's been going on in your life? I think we know.
I've had pneumonia, and that's pretty much it. I've been working and had pneumonia. That's my life.
She went to the doctor, and the doctor was like, we should take an x-ray, and Tawny was like, nah. So the doctor's like, I'll guess that what you need then. Here's some medicine, I guess.
Yeah.
Have fun trying not to die, I guess. And bye. Yeah,
that's pretty much exactly how
we
it
don't
went.
Know which lung it is or if it's both of them, but okay.
Tawny was like, $100. I'd rather die.
I don't have health insurance, and I didn't want to pay the extra $100 just to get an x-ray when I already knew what I had.
I'll just write it out.
Support us on Patreon. We're Americans, and we need all the money we can get to stay alive.
Oh, if only we were Canadian.
If only we were Canadian. Yeah.
I really want to move to Canada. Yeah. I feel like it'd be nice.
I had a really bad toothache for like a month, and I was just constantly going around the house wailing, I'm moving to Canada! Because my strategy for toothaches for the last decade has been take some Advil and hope it goes away on its own. Usually takes about a month, but they always go away eventually.
That's so much worse than me.
No,
you've built up new immunities in the meantime. So.
Yeah, I'm immune to cavities now. It's a thing.
It was actually really funny because when I was sick, there was one night where I slept upstairs and I was
in the hospital bed in which our grandfather recently passed away.
Yeah, and Asia
came
in.
It's very comforting, isn't it?
And she thought I was dead.
I did. I got up. I'm not usually the first person awake.
Okay, so maybe at least one poor decision on your part in that case.
I'm not usually the first person to wake up, but when I woke up and I realized, oh no, I'm the first person awake. Am I going to have to be the one to find Tawny's dead, cold body in the living room? Because she seriously seemed like she was on death's door the night before. And so
I was very
ill. I was like, procrastinating. I was like making coffee and stuff, and then I finally walked in.
You were
there.
Procrastinating.
I didn't want to find
what
you.
If I was almost dead and you were just I died because you were making coffee.
Well, my CPR certification is like about to expire, so I don't know if I could have done much.
Anyway, the worst.
It wouldn't be the first time I almost let you die from choking.
I know,
death over here.
Oh, man. One time when we were younger, a lot younger, I was eating a a hot link, a large sausage, and it slipped into the back of my throat, and so I was choking, and I run into the room where Asia is. She's on the computer, and I tap her shoulder, and I'm like, and she just looks at me, and then goes back to her computer. And I'm like, trying to
cough. I was in a state of flow. I didn't understand what was happening.
And so I was like, well, I guess I'm on my own. And so I start, like, really trying to get this sausage out of my throat. And basically.
While someone else is already in the room who's qualified.
Exactly.
But just indifferent.
Uh-huh. Okay. And so,
I didn't know she was choking.
And so I cough up this sausage. And I'm like, Asia, what is wrong with you? I was choking. And she just looks at me like, oh, I thought you were just saying it was hot.
I thought she was saying the sausage was hot and was going like, you know, that kind of thing. And
you
I was
have to
like,
inhale to be able to do that.
I was like, all right, fine. It's okay.
Why would
get back to Neopets.
Why would I run into the room and get your attention just to say it's hot?
I don't know. That's why I thought it was preposterous and just let it... Listen, this is just another difference between INTJs and INTPs. I'm going to blame that. Because I was very focused on the computer. And you were trying to communicate with only facial expressions. Like, I was going to understand that.
I was just also going to judge gesturing. You all the time now.
Yeah.
Huh?
Now she's just going to judge you all the time.
Well,
now,
that's
right?
I mean, not right? Now. She was born doing that. But yeah, so how did we get on that topic?
So anyway, Asia, what's up with you lately?
Oh, that's why. It was because I finally did go in there with my coffee, and she was laying there like the sunlight was beaming down directly on her.
With an angelic chorus in the background.
Her lips were like the exact same color as the rest of her face. She looked all waxy, you know, like straight up like every corpse I've ever seen. And she was
How
just,
many corpses have you seen, Asia?
A few. And okay. A couple of them were, like, of direct lineage. And the next one would be Tawny. And she has, like, a similar face. And she was making the same face. Like, her mouth was hanging open.
And we're still talking about corpses. Then.
Yes.
Okay.
And so she just could not have looked more dead. And I walked closer to her. And she, like, opened her eyes. And I was like, oh, good, you're not dead, and, like, took a sip of my coffee and walked away. And she was like, what?
Yeah, it was great to wake up to that.
Oh, good.
Oh, good, you're not dead.
That's how I texted her for the next few days, too. We're like, you lied.
And so that was the day I decided I should go to the doctor.
Because you were mistaken for dead.
Yeah. Oh, good times.
Anyway, that
a
took...
A week ago.
Anyway, nothing's going on with me, like, at all. I'm going to a crab feed tonight.
Oh, that's what you're going to.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yay. That'll be... I want to show up a couple hours late, because they always take a couple hours to try and fill you up on salad and stuff. I'm there for the crab, okay? Mm-hmm. Stop trying to give me bread and salad for 2 hours. I'll be eating all the crab I want, thank you.
So, we have one correction to make, and this is actually a correction that I commented, because in the last podcast, Asia referred to Going Home by Radical Face, which is actually called Welcome Home.
Well, I was going home at the time that I first heard the song.
It's actually Welcome Home, Son.
And I was also...
You wrote the correction incorrectly.
I was also not a son. And so I think in my head, I just changed it to match me. Going home, Asia. Not welcome home, son.
Justified.
Okay.
No, not justified.
All right, let's get to questions and answer them. First question. Can chloroform really kill you? I'm just going to go ahead and say yes.
I'd say yes.
Yes.
If handled improperly.
Yeah, too much of anything can kill you. Actually, I remember...
Too much water can kill you.
Yeah, it's happened.
Too many hot links can kill you.
Too many is sometimes one. And a negligent sister.
too much pneumonia.
I actually read a long time ago that some people get annoyed when they see how, like, easily and casually people use chloroform on TV shows because they're like, that's actually really dangerous. People don't always wake back up from chloroform. So, yeah, it can kill you. Don't play with it. It's got chlor in it. Anything that starts with chlor sounds really dangerous to me. Chlorine and
smelly.
Yeah.
What about chlorophyll?
Straight chlorophyll.
It's so green.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. All green things. Green things are bad.
I guess chloroseptic is okay, but I actually found out that that can be dangerous too, and even lead to death if you overdose on it. So, and even it can absorb through your skin, like if you spray it all over your body or something, that can be real bad. I had reasons for looking this up. I will not explain myself.
Okay.
All right. Next question.
Next question.
Go ahead.
Can dichotomies serve a purpose in art? Oh, wait. I need to get out my monocle to answer this question. In the world of art, we're kind of living in an era where things are becoming sort of ambiguous. In other words, we're living in an era of shades. Like, nothing can be honestly bad. So we kind of say things like, well, it's art. It can just be whatever it wants to be. But I'm wondering if that's always the case. I do understand the one side, but is it valuable art? Is it good art? Can there be such a thing as good art? And this was asked to us by an INFJ, which I think is interesting because he's about to get a reply from two INTJs and an INTP. So
I remember how that works out. My sophomore year of high school, my English teacher asked the class which type of art they prefer, Da Vinci or Picasso. I'm curious what you guys would answer to that.
Da Vinci was my number one hero when I was growing up. Like, when people be like, who's your favorite celebrity? I was like, Leonardo Da Vinci, because I was a little dweeb. But I just read everything about Leonardo Da Vinci. I loved everything about him, like his inventions and his stupid writing backwards, and I it made me sad I wasn't left-handed because I wanted to be left-handed like Da Vinci. But I also appreciated Picasso once I learned more about him, because some people, they see Picasso's stuff for the first time and they're like, oh, looks like a kid drew that. You have to look back at Picasso's Blue Period, for instance, to realize he was a fantastic realist artist. He had that ability, but he really experimented and changed the whole idea of art at the time, which for most people, art is recreating reality. And he was kind of revolutionary in that he was more capturing the feelings of something by breaking it down. So I'm not so great at creating abstract art myself. I don't know if part of my brain just doesn't work that way. I have an ESFP friend, and that's all she does. She just loves painting abstract art. She really plays with the shapes and the colors and everything. And honestly, through her art, I've gained more of an appreciation for abstract art because I think it's because I know her. I can see her personality in the art. Instantly, I identify more with and aspire to be Da Vinci because, like, his skill and his intelligence and all that. But Picasso is definitely in my mind equally an artist, if we're gonna talk about artists.
I'll just ask which you prefer.
You know I don't have dichotomous answers.
So, Megan?
I feel like probably the least qualified person to answer this question because I have not studied art, as Asia has, obviously.
Studied is a strong word.
Well, compared to the answer I'm going to give, definitely. I think you were talking about this in your last podcast, about how difficult it is, at least for you, to be free-form enough in the way that seems that some of the great artists and musicians really are, to improvise and to just feel free when whatever their medium is in expressing themselves, which I have not yet figured out how to do for myself. I'm still very constructed and perfectionist in my own mind. So I definitely prefer realist art when I do see it. It's hard for me to explain what I do and do not like because I don't know it until I see it necessarily. And I can't always explain it to you. And there's very, very few rules that I have with myself about art. So generally, without knowing very much about the individuals, I would lean toward Da Vinci just because he's what I have seen of him is more of a realist. Mm-hmm. And that's what I prefer. And that's all I know how to say on that.
So just to be clear, when I talk about learning about Picasso's Blue Period, I'm referring to when I was in fifth grade and we had art docent and they showed us some paintings from Picasso's Blue Period. And I was 11-year-old and he was like, what the? He could paint really good. How about you, Tawny?
I had chosen Da Vinci, and it's pretty much very similar to Megan, just of what I know and what I appreciate generally in art is realism, because I feel like it does require more skill, like technical skill, to be able to capture things in that sense. But I do have an appreciation for abstract art as well. I think as far as like this question, what I consider art depends on like the intention. Mm-hmm. Because people who just like want to make money with art or doing something easy will take a canvas, splatter some paint on it and say, oh, it's art. You just don't get it, you know? But then there's people who, if you actually know the intention behind it and if there's like an actual story and if they put like a lot of effort into this piece, even though it's not realism, I feel like that's still really good art.
What do you think about, do you know who, is it Jason or Jackson? I always forget. Jason or Jackson Pollock?
Pollock.
I always read words and I don't hear them. Really, he makes those big abstract paintings and they basically do look like splattered paint, mm-hmm, at first glance. And then you look at it and you're like, you can see there's some thought that went into it. And sometimes it's hard for me. I think because I do make art, I can get annoyed sometimes when I see paintings that look super easy. And the only thing keeping me from mass producing the thing they made is that I don't have $5,000 to spend on a gigantic canvas and a bunch of paint and the confidence that somebody's going to buy it. So that's one thing that gets annoying to me. But on the other hand, I have to remember that over the centuries and even in my lifetime, people's perceptions of what art is has changed. Like Van Gogh wasn't appreciated in his time, and now we all think he's one of the greatest artists ever. And it can be hard sometimes for us now looking back to think, well, why didn't people appreciate his art back then? Look at it, it's cool. But there's perspective, that's a big difference. His intention that we didn't know very much about him before, probably.
Did no one watch that Doctor Who episode?
I know, right? Nobody. Not one single person. I am having so much trouble explaining what I mean, though. I just did the Violet Beauregard thing.
She had to readjust her headband.
I readjusted my headband thing. Basically, okay, so why don't we expand it beyond famous artists? So we all acknowledge that Da Vinci and Picasso are artists, correct? Mm-hmm. Like, whether yes, it's your taste or not, it's art. It counts. But what about things that people do, they call art? Like, the person who asked this question said, I didn't quite catch what he was saying, but he said something about he saw some man who was conducting a potted plant and called that art. And I don't know if he meant like an
electrical conducting.
I don't know if he meant electrical or orchestral. I was assuming orchestral conducting.
Okay.
So I tend to feel like if there is an intention and a meaning behind it, or even a creative impulse,
you're
then
just repeating what I just said.
It is art for them. No, I'm not. You didn't say the other thing I said. You only said intention and the creative impulse. I think whatever somebody makes and they call art is art. It's just, no.
Vacuuming.
Listen, we're just going to keep going. Somebody's vacuuming upstairs. We're going to deal with it. I think it is art, but I think when you get into the good and the bad words, that's not necessarily constructive when it comes to talking about art. Sarah Green of The Art Assignment, she was talking recently about how it's not super helpful to tell someone, I like that, or I don't like that. When you're talking about art, it's more important to say exactly what it is you appreciate about it, right, or what it is you don't appreciate about it, or what it could be changed, or what could be changed, or what it means to you. So
my grandmother was a painter, and we learned that very quickly on how to comment.
Yeah. And I think artists appreciate it because, you know, sometimes people create art, they put it out there in the world, and then they get feedback about what it meant to people, and it has nothing to do with what the artist's intention was. And at that point, it gets a little confusing because sometimes the artist likes other people's interpretations better than what their original intention was.
It's like, oh, yes, I definitely meant to do that.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
yes.
That goes into, like, writing also.
Music.
Yeah, music.
I get that a lot. People are like, oh, so, you know, your song that's about this. And I'm like, that's not what it's about, but okay.
But it's like, at that point, tried. Once it's into the world and it kind of belongs to the person who's taking it in to appreciate it the way they want to appreciate it. So your intention and the way it's taken can be two totally different things. So I just think it's really not constructive to think about art in a dichotomous way like that, like good, yeah, bad, black and white. It's just not going to ever work. No one's ever going to agree on what art is or what's good or
exactly,
bad.
Because it's such a personal thing both to the artist and to the consumer, and they will be totally different things, but they are valid to both of them and so different.
Yeah.
Whether exactly. we agree with one or the other or not, it is still that thing to each person.
Exactly.
And that's what can make it so controversial as well, I think.
So we have a really thought-provoking question next.
I'm so happy it's not another art question, to be honest.
It's kind of an art question.
It kind of is, yeah, you're right.
You're correct.
Is it pronounced crayon or crayon?
This is one of those questions where I feel like I know the answer, but every time somebody asks it, I suddenly don't remember how I say the word.
I know. Now I have to think about it.
I'm kind of...
It's crayon.
Crayon.
It's
crayon.
Kind of somewhere in the middle for me.
Yeah, it's like in the middle. I kind of just say crayon, like, but longer.
Mm-hmm.
Crayon.
Crayon.
You have an accent
crayon.
In Y and you're crayon.
Crayon.
I have a little bit of a Y, but I have heard people be like crayon, and I'm like, no.
Crayon.
It's absurd.
I think it depends on my mood. And
can
how
you
quickly
hand
I need to
red?
Convey the information about
crayon.
But I have
wax.
I have heard people say crayons.
Crayons.
No.
Crayons.
No.
And that's like how little kids say it, and it's like they never learned how to spell the word or something.
Even though it's on
know.
The box.
Crayons. It's,
well, maybe they can't read yet.
It doesn't bug me quite as much as people calling wolves woofs, but
oh.
It's up there.
Pillows, palos.
A woof. I remember the first time I heard that, I was in first grade, and it was another student who said woof, and I was like, a what? And she's like, a woof. And I was like, a woof is the sound a dog makes. I think you mean a wolf. And she's like, no, a woof. And I was like, show me, where's this L going? And she's like, I don't know how to spell. What are you talking about?
We can't read, Asia.
I'm like, well, I can. I can't add two numbers together, but I can read. Wolf. It's four letters. Anyway.
Well, I could argue so is woof, but never mind.
Well, okay, but those aren't the correct letters. I've heard grown adults call them woofs, though. What is that? Is it a regional thing? But we're from the same place. All right. Would you like to ask the next question, Megan?
Should I say who it's from or no?
Go ahead. I haven't really been doing that, but go ahead.
Okay, this is from Christian. The moon landing. Was it real?
Yes.
Tawny?
Tawny? What's this hesitation?
I'm questioning everything now.
It's like, yes? Part of me is always doubtful about everything.
I understand, actually.
It's like, I'm 95% sure. 98% sure.
My 98-year-old Japanese grandmother thought the moon landing was fake.
Yeah. Well,
she said, okay, Bachan, that's great.
Okay. When I first heard that some people thought the moon landing was fake, it was as absurd to me as them saying the world was flat, which has surprisingly also been called into question as of late. But, you know, then I understood, okay, that's a pretty big thing. Maybe I shouldn't just take it for granted that everything I've been taught is true. They also told me Christopher Columbus discovered America. So, like,
that's, you know, that's why I have the 2% there. I'm just in case.
5 to 2%.
I would say strongly, though, the evidence points to yes. I would like it if science made it a little easier for me to use a telescope to see the footprints and stuff we left on the moon. I'm still not 100% sure why I can't, if I can see stuff further away than the moon. So I need to look that up. That's my only issue at the moment. Why? Show me the footprints.
Hashtag. Show me the footprints.
Hashtag. Hashtag not my NASA. Hashtag not my moon landing. Hashtag fake Armstrong. Hashtag I'm with Earth.
That being said, I will say yes. It was real.
Yeah. It was pretty much definitely real. Tawny looks so incredulous right now, though. It's because you're like me, and the only way to be sure of anything is to, okay, now I have to study physics and get in shape so I can be an astronaut and go to the next moon.
I always wanted to be an astronaut. Like, that was, as a kid, my number one dream.
It was, and like, number three for me.
Maybe part of that was, I have to know if this is real.
All right, so we're like, between the three of us, 99.99% sure that the moon landing was real.
Our next question is from other Jacob, because the crayon question was from original Jacob.
Crayon? See, it messes with your ability to remember how you say it.
So, other Jacob asks, how did Elvis really die?
As I told him when he asked this question.
On the toilet?
With drugs. And he said, no, we're going to figure out how he really died. I'm like, just because you liked his music doesn't mean he didn't die in an embarrassing way that I learned in third grade.
He had a heart attack on the toilet, right?
Well, I think also he had a lot of drugs in his system.
Well.
And, yeah, it was on the toilet.
While on the toilet.
Yeah. Of course, this is all hearsay. I've never looked it up myself. A third grader told me, and I've believed it ever since. But I'm pretty sure it's true.
I've read about it.
Okay, then we know. Sorry, Jacob, your hero died on a toilet.
Why is Elvis his hero?
He just likes Elvis, I guess. That's what he said in the last podcast.
People need to choose better heroes.
I keep telling people on Twitter, stop having heroes. They all disappoint you. The only way to be happy is not have heroes. They are all either disappointing.
Don't look up to anyone.
Don't!
They're everyone all humans. Sucks.
You know, we wouldn't get so outraged by celebrities' bad opinions on things all the time if we stopped treating them like authorities and started remembering that they're people who play pretend for money. And that their opinions don't matter.
I like that you're just repeating a tweet that you have. Like, word for word.
Not enough people follow me on Twitter, Donnie. This is important information, needs to get out there. Yeah. Okay, so, can the mind move objects without limbs?
Who asked this question?
I do not remember. I think it was Andrew. And I told him that I tried a lot. Every time I don't want to get up and get something, I focus real hard.
In our next segment, Asia's Test of the Force.
Oh, man. I remember when one of the old Star Wars movies came out, and by old, I mean...
You mean the prequels?
Yes, and I was still in elementary school, and I was going up the stairs after recess, and I turned around, and I gestured towards the bottom of the stairs because my cousin was there, and at the same time that I put my hand out towards him, he, like, tripped and fell and flew backwards, and I was like... The Force is strong with me. Like, and it was seriously my first taste of being a nerd at all, because it was the first time I'd ever seen something in a sci-fi movie and then applied it to my real life and pretended it was real. And it felt
awesome.
That
was like my entire childhood.
I was like, that's when it started?
Like,
not earlier?
Well, by then, Tawny had us like... already being nerds around her, so
I had like whole alien worlds.
I got to be a nerd all by myself.
Okay, but I just also want to go back and say that we don't need to act like it's not already pretty amazing what her mind does, mm-hmm. our mind is moving our limbs. That's stinking cool. And it's emphasized when people lose their limbs and now they've got those new prosthetics that you can basically control with your mind too. And I'm like, wow, that's so rad. That is like the closest thing to telekinesis I think we have.
With only electrical impulses.
I know, it's nuts. Like, and the fact that people feel phantom limbs too when they lose their limbs, their brains like, mm-hmm. no, that's still there. And it's like it's still sending out those electrical signals trying. Oh, that would make a good sci-fi story, actually. Noted. Phantom limb sci-fi story. Memo for future self. All right, anyway.
There was a show I watched that was kind of...
I never have an original idea somewhere.
I'm trying to remember what it was. It was on
the Twilight Zone in the 60s?
No. But it was about like prosthetic limbs basically, like having a mind of their own.
I mean phantom limbs.
Yeah, I know, but it reminded me of that.
The way that Asia flexed her hand as she said that. No, I mean phantom limbs.
And then it did like that Dr. Horrible finger movement.
So it's kind of a goosebumps plot. That we all had telekinesis. We do not. And the mind cannot move objects.
Wait.
Without limbs.
Without limbs.
My mind can make my mouth move and words come out that tell somebody else to move something.
Or you could use like your breath to like
push
something away. But that's not your mind. Really,
Everything I do is my mind.
It's
and a system of nerves. Well, everything else that people see is just protection for
the weird tentacle monster inside of me. It with your limbs. Your mind is telling your limbs to do it, and your mind is telling your mouth to do it. I'm moving on to the next question.
Good, because I'm gonna strangle you.
I don't know who this question is from, but
you'll figure it out.
I think education is headed the wrong way because it's still focused on IQ instead of EQ, emotional intelligence, because I feel like you can get someone to be emotionally intelligent enough to know their own potential, then they'll actually chase learning.
INFJ asked this question. Hmm. Same INFJ from before with the art question.
I mean, the only question is a paragraph long.
Yeah.
And not actually a question. There are no question marks in this, nope. this statement.
It's a statement. He started to ask this question, and then he was like, wait, never mind. This is just me going on rants about stuff.
So what they're saying or proposing is that our education be shifted to treat emotional intelligence instead of...
I strongly feel that at least in the first few years of school, that's exactly what happens. I feel like they're way more focused on, like, emotions and behavior than they are on numbers. Like, our grades were satisfactory and unsatisfactory, not A, B, C, until we got to, like, fourth or fifth grade. I feel like we shouldn't keep categorizing kids by their birthday, though. I feel like it should be up to ability and interest, because what happens is by a certain age, like, I don't know what the exact age would be, but I would say at least by 10 or 11, kids kind of have a lot of their interests figured out and their strengths are starting to become super clear. But all the way through high school, we keep forcing them to all take the same subjects. You still have to keep going in math. You still have to keep going all the way in English. And I understand like wanting to at least maintain a basic level to get along in society of those topics. But I think you should at least be... I feel like we should encourage kids more to focus on what their strengths already are. So, one, they'll enjoy their education more, like he said. They'll chase their education more, chase learning. Because, for example, different personality types tend to... I was just listening to a different podcast, Personality Hacker, about how they've done brain scans on the different personality types. When they get into a flow state, you know, which is whenever you're doing anything that you enjoy so much that time just goes by super fast because you're so focused. You're not thinking about anything else. And the only reason you stop is because, like, you fall asleep or you get very hungry or something. But usually you forget to eat a few meals first. And they were saying those brain scans showed that it was different for each personality type what got people into that flow state. And so I think we just need to take into account people's personalities and interests a lot more. I think we'd get a lot more skilled workers into the workforce and more advancements probably if people were allowed to focus on what interested them instead of still treating it like we're training all these kids to work in factories and go serve in the army, because that was what the public school system was originally modeled after, was a factory. Tawny is making the worst, most bored faces
at me. Well, I have thoughts on this as well.
Okay, continue. I just wasn't done.
I think that you're right to a degree. I think that children should receive a general education. I do think that they should be placed based on ability, not by interest, though, because, you know, a kid's interests are going to change, you know, constantly. But one thing that really bothered me is that when I went back to school, when I went to college to trying to get a degree in computer science and in photography, it really bothered me that in order to do that, I had to take a communications class, a math class, English class, and all of that, when I've already done those things. I should be done, you know.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
I don't need those in order to learn computer science. I already have, you know, the basic knowledge that I need there. And then I wanted to focus on those, you know, other courses, but instead I had to waste so much time. And that's, it was very frustrating. Our next question, Megan, would you like to ask?
Okay. What is the general impression people have of jazz? Like, what do you think jazz is? Supplementary. Only 3% of Gen Pop likes classical music. Is jazz next?
So what happened here is one person asked the question about jazz, and then his friend piped in and said, only 3% of the general population likes classical music. And so what I'm wondering, is jazz music the next classical music? To which I replied, only 3% of the population likes classical music?
I'm part of the 3% already?
It was my favorite a station on the radio when I was a kid.
That's still all I listened to in the car.
I listened to that in public radio, and those were the only stations I listened to when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But I did not like jazz until I became an adult, even though I was in jazz band.
I liked jazz. I think, though, I didn't love jazz when I was a kid because I associated it with, like, elevator music, but then yeah. I realized, oh,
or Sesame
you know,
Street.
Like Louis Armstrong, that's...
I hated jazz.
I love early jazz. That's...
I hated jazz because I associated it with elevator music, but I also associated it with, like, I don't know, Barry White, like weird, overly sensual jazz music. And mom would like.
Is Barry White even jazz?
I don't know. Mom would listen.
Sensual elevator music.
Mom would listen to like yeah. disco and jazz, and both of them drove me nuts. Like whatever it was she was listening to, I wanted to die. And it wasn't until like I became an adult that I listened to. I don't even know how to describe what it is. I just know now that there's some jazz I appreciate a lot more than whatever it was I was listening to back then.
Oh, smooth jazz.
Oh, smooth jazz. Oh. That's what I hate.
No.
No, thank you.
No.
Yeah. I like it to be a bit cacophonous. Like, they're just all four instruments are up there making it up as they go along.
So this question is basically asking us to put a statistic to the impression of jazz. But we only have our own opinions.
I said, that's
the only opinion that matters.
But that's not really fair.
And we all like classical music, so we're in the minority. Yeah. I think the general impression people have of jazz, though, from what I've heard, is that it's just below rap and country music on those genres that people say, I like all music except rap and country music. And jazz, and then like disco.
Yeah. I'm one of those people, but it's just country. I'm like, I like all music except country.
I used to say those things too, but then I heard some country I liked, and I heard some rap I liked, and I heard some jazz I liked, and I even heard some funky disco music I liked. So it turns out it just depends on the music.
Well, that's the thing, is my taste in music is so eclectic. I mean, yeah. It's primarily classical music and show tunes, but you know yes. what? There's some things that I like out of everything.
Same.
It may only be one track, but...
That one I like.
I think I can still, I just don't think there's any country music I found that I liked.
Bluegrass. You don't like bluegrass?
Separate category in my mind.
My dad is, this is a complete tangent, but my dad is...
Wait, that's part of our intro.
Yes, I realize that. He is musically impaired.
Same.
No, there is...
Wow.
There is only one Megan's dad, and there is no one quite like him. We were with some friends, and they were playing music in the background, and he was trying to figure out, you know, what new thing, what is this? And I said it was R&B. He was like, R&B, what does that stand for? I said, that's rhythm and blues. He said, is that anything like bluegrass? I said, no. No, Megan's dad, that is not.
Rhythm and bluegrass.
You call your dad Megan's dad.
Well, he doesn't like anyone to know what he's doing, so for his own protection, I'm just calling him Megan's dad, since I don't know if he actually wants me to say his name on here.
I just really, I want you to, like, from now on, just be like, hey, Megan's dad, you know, when you're talking to
well,
him.
Well, no one can pronounce our name, so that's what they always called him in school. Hi, Megan's mom. Hi, Megan's dad. Instead of Mrs.
You know, every time I hear anybody say your last name, it's different. Like, every time, I'm like, nobody knows where to put the consonant in there.
Well, that's because there are none in there.
It's like, they say Ueno, Ueno, Uyeno.
And each member of the family pronounces it slightly different.
Each member of the family? Because I was about to ask you for the official pronunciation.
There is no official pronunciation.
Okay, because I usually say Ueno when I'm not thinking, and then when I'm trying to be more conscious of it, I say Uyeno. But it's hard.
When you're more conscious of it, you start to stutter.
Yeah, I can't overthink things.
Well, for the sake of explaining, my last name is Japanese, and here we spell it Ueno, and it is the Y that throws everyone off when they're reading it. And I always knew when anyone was calling on me, it says Megan, and is it, that's me. And but all my cousins in Japan do not spell it with a Y. It is Ueno. You can use the Y in Japan. Like, there's a rail station named after the zoo and a Hard Rock Cafe, but both spellings are acceptable. But here, for poor American English speakers, it is the Y that really messes people up.
I always pronounce it Ueno.
What if... Mm-hmm. So it's not Ueno, though. You guys should just move the Y to the beginning. And we'd all say Ueno. We'd all say Ueno.
So yeah, the Y is not supposed to be in there. Me and my dad say Ueno a lot. I think just because we're used to enunciating it very carefully to people and trying to spell it out repeatedly. Mm-hmm. And every time we spell it out, it is repeated back to us in a different order.
Yeah.
And his sister pronounces it differently. And his mother, what she would say is it's just Bueno without the B. Because when the Japanese say it and just say it conversationally, quickly, without thinking about it, like we have to, it just comes out Ueno.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's how my mom has chosen to pronounce it.
I've been trying to learn Japanese, and I always think I've got it. Like, I've got this pronunciation. And I've been told, your accent's pretty good. But then I'm watching a show, or I'm listening to, like, real-life Japanese people speak, and I'm like... They say that so fast. Like, they're just blurring right over the letters that I'm trying so hard to pronounce.
Yeah.
Like, I'm never going to be able to understand anyone who's talking to me. Because I can't spell it out in my head.
I think that's always, it's kind of the same with a lot of languages.
Oh, French, don't get me started. They don't even believe in pronouncing the right letters. There's an S in there, why not? We're not going to say it, who cares?
I don't care, they do actually, as long as they pronounce it properly.
From jazz.
We were talking about my dad. Megan's dad, and how he gets confused with music.
Oh, INTs and their tangents.
All right, so our last question we have, what do people think about bass players?
Well, the last question.
Any kind of bass. Not the last question we have.
No, the last question
for
now.
There's so many questions.
We'll take a break from questions after this, and then if we still have more time, then we'll ask more. I feel like the bass player in every rock band, at least, is the cool, quiet one in the band.
Like, they make no facial expressions.
or just... they make a lot of eye contact with the people in the audience and flirt with Asia in the front row.
Well, we can't all be Asia. So.
No, I'm just remembering my very first concert. It was Minus the Bear. And I felt like the bass player and I had kind of like a vibe going. But I feel like it's because he wasn't really paying attention. It's not like he had to sing or anything very much. So he was just kind of like looking down at the people in the audience. And I was like, hi.
How you doing?
How you doing?
So that's Asia's impression of the bass player is, how you doing?
But he also said upright bass also.
Or double bass.
Or double bass.
I don't really have any particular opinion about bass players, honestly.
Tawny's not a bass player, so she looks down on y'all.
Which is something we're used to, isn't it, Tawny?
You
can't say funny things while I'm coughing, because the funny things get edited out.
Should I say it again?
No, I'm just not gonna edit that out.
Okay.
Oh, I don't want everyone to hear me hacking up my lungs.
It's funny. I also have an affinity for the upright bass players because I always really identified with the stereotypical beatnik scenes in every piece of media I ever consumed. Every like strong female character I identified with as a kid growing up, basically a stereotypical beatnik character. And there was always like that scene where they were doing slam poetry to an upright bass, and I was like, yes, this is my aesthetic. Like as a 6-year-old Asia. Anyway.
All right. Megan, do you have an opinion on bass players?
Not really an opinion, just some passing thoughts.
All right, so here's the part where we can... Well, they were still passing, I passed right over that. What are your passing thoughts?
Okay, then.
I wasn't even thinking at all. I was thinking about the next thing.
This is what it's like being around her all the time. Where, oh yeah, I do have a thought about this. Well, let's go on to the next thing.
Well, good for you.
I don't care.
I assumed you were going to say no. I just kept
going. Well, it is kind of no, so yeah, I can see how you could do that.
I'm just very bad at listening.
My great-grandfather, so Megan's mom's grandpa, was a prolific musician in the 30s.
Wow. This is not a passing thought at all.
Is it ever? And he, one of the things that he did was he played in nightclubs. And he, one of the things he did was play the bass, and my mom would always say, you know how you see in the movies, and then they would stand up and swing it around and spin it, and says, that's what he would do, and your grandma would dance, and like... Okay. My great-grandmother, actually, sorry.
So, you're telling me that a bass player is literally the reason you exist, and you almost let me pass over it?
I don't know if that's the reason I exist.
It was obviously that swinging bass.
I don't know what my great-grandmother thought about bass players, but...
She danced.
Yeah, in a nightclub.
So.
While those kids stayed in the car.
Wow.
Yeah.
So anyway, all I'm saying is you're the only one here who had any relevant experience or information.
It wasn't an opinion.
I feel like I have a lot of relevant experience.
No, because you think you're better than bass players.
I never said that.
But you didn't not say it.
No, I don't think I'm better than bass players. I just don't have, like, a particular... I don't think there is any real stereotype for bass players.
It's not that she looks down on the bass players. It's just that she doesn't think about the bass players.
Sure.
Okay. It's not what I hate. Sorry, you. It's just that he never crossed my mind. See, I didn't have anyone to do that with me last time.
Wait, did you actually do that last time?
With you?
I don't remember.
Yeah, episode 2.
Wow, okay.
Or 3.
So, Asia, do you have any prepared jokes?
Heck no. I've been hilarious this entire time. This is the part where we feature our guest host a bit more.
You don't want me to tell you more about the bass player?
This is your self-promo section, so...
I don't know how to do that.
tell us more about your YouTube channel.
Well, I just recorded my 10th episode yesterday. I have yet to... No.
She's beating us by 5 episodes.
Sorry, I did record. I have yet to edit and upload, so maybe I'll get around to that today. I will discuss the things that I've just finished, so things that are all done.
Mm-hmm.
So that's finished objects, and then I go into what is commonly called a WIPs, which is a little bit misleading. It is short for works in progress, so what I'm working on now. And then I'll go into things that I have bought, my acquisitions segment. So that's not everyone in podcasting community likes that. Sometimes it's just like, oh, you just got a bunch of things I couldn't. But on the other hand, other people can say, hey, oh, I never heard of that, or that looks cool. I want to check out that person's shop.
That's actually
it's kind of promotion.
Yeah.
At least that's how I think about it.
That's a weird attitude. I mean, considering how popular unboxing videos are on YouTube.
Yeah, so I like that. And then recently I've also been getting into learning how to hand dye yarn.
Ooh.
So right now I'm just, you know, as money allows, getting new dyes and making samples of those little tiny skeins that are a lighter color than it actually is, but it still gives me a base point to reference those colors, and then going to start mixing those colors. I do have some full skeins that I've tried out, and just I don't really know what I'm doing, but I'm just playing around.
I've always pronounced it skeins in my head.
That's a point of contention, actually, whether okay. it's skein or skein.
I'm saying skein now.
Just because. I say skein, so a pet dream of mine is to have my own yarn dyeing micro business.
Ooh.
If I ever figure out what the heck I'm doing.
That'd be cool, because I'm not like a huge yarn nerd, but I do crochet sometimes, and I haven't done it in a long time because I keep going to regular stores where you get yarn, and I'm just not very happy with any of the yarn, because I'm like, I could buy a better quality scarf for almost the same cost as this yarn.
You also should try going to a specialty shop as well, not a big box store.
The other end of that is that I have gone into like tiny stores before too, and I will find like the yarn of my dreams, like the perfect deep turquoise soft,
and it's $60.
Yeah, and I'm like, I wouldn't even spend $60 on a professionally created scarf.
If it's pretty enough, I'll get it. If it's special enough, I'll get it.
But I'm more of a person who gets all of my clothing second or third hand, so it's really hard for me to justify spending that much money on something that I then have to go home and make myself.
No, that's understandable.
But like, it's, you know, it's not my passion, it's just something I do sometimes.
Yeah, so it's, for me, it's not a hobby anymore, it's a lifestyle.
Yeah.
So, and I don't really spend money on anything else, so.
That I understand, because I will spend ridiculous amounts of money on art supplies, or...
Right, and this is this is my medium, I guess, and I'm hoping that yarn dyeing is also a better medium for me.
Me too, because then I'm going to be like, hey, Megan, some yarn over there?
Yeah. Hey, Megan.
Discounts.
And then sometimes, and I'll give my opinions on what I think of yarn, because I don't end up liking all yarn that I work with, and it's obviously just my opinion, but I will go ahead and say when I'm not happy with something, or I had an issue with a pattern that this wasn't written very, not necessarily correctly, but just not in a way that I can understand it. But that's why there's so many things, is because all of our brains take in things differently.
I do not knit, because I cannot understand knitting patterns even a tiny bit. I only know one crochet pattern, and that's it.
There have been ones that I've just torn out my hair over. So what do you want? What are you trying to say? And then someone else can do the same thing and just, oh, I get it. Or there's a particular technique. If my mom's listening, she'll remember this. It's called a Kitchener stitch. It's basically mimicking a knit stitch, but with a needle and thread. So you can close a seam seamlessly, basically, invisibly.
Wow.
If you do it correctly. I did not do it correctly for a long time.
I'm not a very crafty person.
Someone gave me instructions on how to do it. Like, you will do it at the end of a toe, maybe. I will not lift up my foot and show you my Doctor Who inspired socks, but
did you make those?
I did. These are
see. We didn't really...
I will lift up my foot now. this is yarn from a dyer in Missouri.
So we didn't really tell the audience what kind of things you make.
Mainly accessories. I'm not very much into garments lately. I don't know why.
What kind of accessories?
Socks and hats, and I'm really doing a lot of cowls and shawls.
I like these socks. Lately. I like this part right here. It's under your heel.
Mm. So this is from a company called Nerd Girl Yarns, who does all fandom-inspired colorways, and this is called Attack Eyebrows, which is a reference to Capaldi's 12th Doctor, which I bought. This is a now retired color, but I bought and knit up so that I could wear them during Peter Capaldi's last episode.
Oh my gosh.
As it broadcast on TV. Feel sad. And feel very sad.
I haven't seen it.
What?
Oh, Tawny.
Yeah, I'm very behind.
Yeah. Well, actually, I was too. I had to watch the whole last season all at once.
Yes. Yeah.
So, obviously, we're talking about things that our audience cannot see.
Yes, that's why I chose YouTube.
But I will link to your YouTube on our Patreon page. You don't have to be a patron to see that. Though there are some things on there that you do have to be a patron to see. But, yeah, if you wanna check out Megan's awesome YouTube page, Grumpy Bagel, that's what it's called, right?
The Grumpy Bagel.
The Grumpy Bagel. Then, yeah, I'll link to that on the Patreon.
One question. Patreon.
Sure.
Where did the Grumpy Bagel come from?
I had a feeling you might ask that. Well, to start out with, I am INTJ, so the Grumpy kind of lends itself to that as my general...
Very obvious.
My general default state. And Bagel comes from my BKF, my best knitting friend. I guess when she first moved to this area, that's the only cool thing I can think of to call her. Sorry, Carly. When she first moved to this area, her eldest child, her daughter, was either just over or under 2 years old. And she couldn't say Megan. So she actually called me Bijou.
Bijou?
And it took me a while to figure out that that's what she was calling me, not just a word that she was throwing at me. So she'd say, Bijou, Bijou, to get my attention. But that was her word for bagel.
Oh.
So it's kind of complicated. So her parents would have said, bagel, what are you calling your bagel for?
Megan and bagel sounded the same to her.
I guess. So it kind of caught on. They'd start calling me bagel when they saw me.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, oh, our parents, you know, back in Washington and Florida call you bagel too. They said, oh, how's bagel doing? And then it just kind of caught on. And I am known by many people as bagel now.
I think you are known by two more people as Bagel now, or maybe more from this podcast.
Yeah. So, well, she called me Bacon a couple times, too, so I'm still in the breakfast foods area, but it's mainly Bagel.
Oh, man, I'm so hungry.
I know.
not a good origin story for someone who's hungry.
Megan has a lot of origin stories, though.
Oh, boy. You mean Bagel.
Bagel has a lot of origin stories. Orange juice stories.
And also, growing up, Grumpy was always my favorite dwarf out of Snow White, so which they should have taken as an omen.
Grumpy too.
He was always my favorite. I
liked Doc.
Of course, you say obviously.
But I had several toys apparently when I was very young, and there is a picture of me with Grumpy at Disneyland, which I was actually, you know, not terrified of.
Wow, I would have been.
So, he was always my favorite. They should have known.
My dad always called me Frowny the Clown when I was growing up.
Frowny the Clown?
Frowny the Clown. He still does sometimes. Because I just frown a lot.
Me that, too, now.
Oh, and then I also, as I mentioned earlier, I will take any time I can to talk about Phantom of the Opera.
Oh, right.
If all of that is done, and I'm done talking about that stuff, then I'll talk about Phantom.
That was one of the things that I think you and I first kind of, like, bonded over.
Yes.
Was Phantom of the Opera, plus that one time I was at your house, and I saw a sign on the wall that said 221B Baker Street, and I was like, oh my gosh, where has this nerdy family been my whole life? Because at the time I was, like, I was in very short supply of people who knew what the heck I was talking about.
And
at
that's
any given
why
moment.
I put it. That's why I bought it when I was in London and put it up there. It says this will be a beacon to the other nerdy people to find me,
like Tawny's TARDIS sticker on her car.
Yeah,
she got a new car, so she had to buy a new TARDIS sticker,
like, immediately.
It was a priority.
The day I bought the car, I went on Amazon and was like, gotta find a new TARDIS sticker.
Now, my mom just got a new car, and she's gonna get my other car as a TARDIS license frame.
I've seen a couple of those.
This is the only time she's ever been able to customize her car like that, so she's very excited.
I never like my car enough to do anything to customize it. I'm not wasting money on this thing.
The only car I liked enough to do that I totaled, so.
Sad.
Back to the questions.
Wait. Mm-hmm. We didn't talk about movies or books.
All right, but we haven't been doing our book club.
Last time we chose the book, or I chose the book, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Tawny, I told you we weren't doing that.
But I read it.
We were supposed to review Star Wars.
But I read it.
You finished it. What did you think?
I liked it.
Good review. Everyone likes that book if they make it to the end. Now you need to read the other four.
Yeah. I probably won't. I have so many other books I need to read.
To be clear, I love that book. It's just that she only wanted to do that book for our book review because she was already reading it. And she's like, it'll be easy, Asia, because you've already read it. I'm like, that's why it can't be the book review book.
I know somebody who read it, though, because it was going to be reviewed.
Who?
Or maybe because it was mentioned.
Who?
Brandon Wong. Well,
he had never read it before?
No.
Brandon, what the heck? And Brandon, you were supposed to be on the podcast where we review Star Wars. What the heck?
Well, he'll be next.
Mm-hmm. I guess we'll review Star Wars then.
It's been a while.
So? We're going to have to see it again?
Maybe.
All right, whatever. All right, so new book. I'm going to choose the new book. It's going to be the book I'm reading. Insert book book here.
No, stupid. Don't do that. Bagel, do you have any... Do you have any book suggestions?
There's one, but that's my favorite book, but I realize it would not be everybody's taste.
Well, we don't care about everyone. What's your favorite book? Well,
I know we don't. it is a very old book. It was published, serially published in 1850s or 60s. It was by Wilkie Collins, who was a protege of Charles Dickens.
Ooh, I like Charles.
So this was one of the great three-volume novels. It is called The Woman in White. And it is absolutely fascinating. And as much as I have issues with Andrew Lloyd Webber right now, I am glad that he made a musical out of it to make sure that I read the actual novel. Oh, which is,
I didn't know that.
It kind of flopped. Mm. It's great music and really clever lyrics, but it didn't do so well either in West End or on Broadway. But it is a... I don't want to say unconventional mystery novel because it was one of the first of that type of mystery novel that was written. It's told in several first-person accounts, and it's prefaced with acting as though this were a court trial. Hmm. And all the characters are stepping forward and giving their testimony. So it may be one page long that, you know, I saw this happen, and someone's telling me that it was important, so I better tell you. And then there will be, you know, volumes and volumes of someone else who is more intimately involved with the thing that happened.
I'm reading Jane Eyre for the first time now.
For the first time? Are you serious?
Yeah, I actually started it a while back, but then I got caught up reading other books. So that is a potential book club book.
It's very, very long.
That's... Maybe it could be a long-term book club book because it's probably going to take people a while to get read.
And I loved it because by halfway through, you know what happened.
Mm-hmm.
But you have no idea how they did it. I got through the end of the second volume, and I thought I was so tired by that point. I'm just thinking, okay, I got to go to bed. And then the plot twist happened, and I... straight up in bed. I was like, what?
Did you ever read plot twist always happens right when you need to go to sleep?
And it's like the biggest one ever, and I had to read three more chapters just to calm myself down to figure out what the heck was going on before I could go to sleep.
Did you ever read Great Expectations?
I have not yet.
So...
It's on my list.
It can drag on a bit. It can be hard to get through a bit.
That's what Charles does. He goes on these tangents and goes on things like, did you see what I did there? Did you see what I did there? I am so clever. It's like, yes, we get it.
Scenes that were completely irrelevant to the plot.
Yes.
But I only read it. I stuck with it. This was my freshman year of high school because my teacher said we all had to choose one book from the library that would be... It could be any book we wanted. At the end of the semester, we had to do a report that could be any style we wanted. It was just a totally independent project. And I chose Great Expectations because I I had never finished a Charles Dickens book before. And, you know, I was like, ooh, this book's so pretty. Like, so I took it out of the library. And my teacher was like,
you know what you're doing.
She's like, I wouldn't even want to finish that book. And I was like, she's like, are you sure? And I, because she said that, I was like, yeah, I'm sure. Like, I get super mad when people act like I can't do something. And oh my gosh, yeah,
I think we're not smart enough to do it.
The only way Asia accomplishes things is out of spite.
That's why I learned the flute and calculus. But I had
spite is an excellent motivator.
Oh, very much for me. But I was so determined to finish that book, even though it did get rough trying to finish it because it's long and it goes on and on. But like right in the last chapter, I don't cry easily, like, from reading, especially, or at least didn't back then. I've gotten a little more emotional as an adult for some reason, but I burst into tears. Like, I started sobbing in, like, the last couple pages of this book, and I was like, after that, for the next several years, people ask me, what's your favorite book? I'm like, Great Expectations, because I cared about those characters so much.
I read the entire Musketeers series by Alexandre Dumas, which not everyone knows that it is actually a series of novels that starts with the Three Musketeers and ends with the Man in the Iron Mask.
What?
Depending on the publisher that you go through, there's three or four novels in between.
Huh.
And being the nerd that I am, I got all of the books and read them and then went through to the end of the Man in the Iron Mask. And, you know, things happen to these characters, and the same thing with you. I don't really cry at books, but a thing happened with a character I had grown very attached to, and I was just sobbing.
I literally remember yelling before I started crying. I yelled. I was like, no!
Look at that.
No, it's not possible. No.
I was just in despair. I was like, this is the most tragic thing.
I know. This is the worst thing that can happen to this person, but yet it's so fitting, and so, no.
I love it. But it ends up being why the book sticks with you.
The Woman in White by Wilkie Collins.
Okay, so that's the book that we all need to read for the next time Megan's on our podcast, and then we'll review it.
when everyone finishes it in 10 years, it is such a big book.
My book choice is Jane Eyre, because I'm already reading it, and I have it, so you can borrow it.
I do love Jane Eyre.
Okay. All right, so it's Jane Eyre, everybody. It's pretty good so far. So.
Do you not know what happens?
I don't, and I've been...
Are you serious?
Militantly, like... avoiding spoilers. People keep trying to spoil it.
I was going to say don't watch the last couple episodes of my podcast, but I just okay. give vague things and spoilers. I just say spoilers.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
I know a couple people have spoiled things for me in the past, but I've already forgotten what the spoilers were.
So you've never seen any adaptation of Jane Eyre?
No, and I remember when a Jane Eyre movie came out years ago,
The one with Mia Wasikowska and Michael Fassbender?
That was probably
it. Or the one with John Hurt.
Because I'm sure I would have wanted to see anything.
Not John Hurt. William Hurt. That would be amazing.
I'm sure I would have wanted to see anything with Michael Fassbender in it. So I remember there was a movie that I...
Well, wait until you're done and then watch the one with Michael Fassbender.
I've seen both versions.
Yes. And I loved the one with Orson Welles and Joan Fontaine.
I only recently finished reading... Well, not recently. It was a few years ago. But I read Wuthering Heights for the first time.
Oh, Lord.
And then I immediately was like, I need to see adaptation.
That is
a stressful book.
That is. I mean, I only watched the Laurence Olivier version way back when, and then watched the one with Ralph Fiennes, which actually goes into, you know, the whole second half of the book. And I thought, oh, you know, it's such a tragic love story. And then reading the rest of it, I thought, oh my gosh.
It's so messed up.
These people are messed up.
Well, after I read the book, I was like, I immediately need to find all the adaptations now. And I don't think I even watched a whole one. I just started watching clips from all the different ones on YouTube.
It's just so depressing. And
I couldn't believe the different interpretations of characters people had. In my head, they're very solidly,
yes,
like, fully fleshed out. I know what all these characters look like.
That was another question I was going to send to you. Maybe I'll just send the question to you, and then we don't have to get into it now.
Okay.
Unless don't you forget. Should unless we go you... back to the questions
yeah,
probably. That we do have?
Tawny probably. Seems very impatient.
I
could tell you were trying to find out how long we've been recording.
We've been recording quite a while. Another thought-provoking question we have.
We could have a two-parter podcast.
Cats or dogs?
Cats.
Cats.
I have two cats, but I like both a lot.
Dogs smell bad.
You like both cats?
Dogs don't always smell. I like both cats, yeah. my cats are very annoying, but I also really like cats in general just because, like, their attitude is very similar to mine.
We identify as cats.
Yeah, but I love dogs too, but I think I'm more picky about what kind of dog because I don't like little yappy dogs. Oh. And if I were to have a dog, I want it to be like an adventure husky or like
a dog with a
or
purpose.
An Australian shepherd, you know, because they're smart, you know.
So I basically a dog with a purpose.
And fluffy, yes.
I literally don't.
What she thinks about Babe for some reason. Just like ducks don't have a purpose.
Can't have a purpose. Oh my gosh. I kind of want to see that movie again now.
Traumatize ourselves again.
I haven't seen Babe, Small Pig in the Big City yet, and I heard it was really good.
Really?
Yeah.
I heard the opposite.
Why would you hear that it's good? That's not possible.
I know a bunch of people who are always saying it's good. Anyway, I don't even own any cats right now because I don't want to take care of a cat. Even less do I want to take care of a dog because they're
so
needy.
They're so self-sufficient, cats are, though.
I know. Some people are like, oh, I like dogs better than cats because cats don't really love you and they don't. I'm like, yeah, yes. Exactly. Like, no, I think cats do like you, but they don't, like, require your presence at all times, which is exactly how I feel about my friends. Like,
that's like how my whole family is. We are at home.
Mm-hmm.
We are each in our own rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not bothered by any of that. Mm-hmm. We know where each other is.
Mm-hmm.
Or each other are. I'm not sure which is the correct grammar on that one. We know where everyone is. And if we need them, we'll find them. I don't need
exactly.
you with me.
Mm-hmm.
I will find you if I need you. And we're all good with that.
I remember.
It's been like that for 30 years.
Well, sometimes people are like, oh, I haven't seen you in forever. And I'm like, it was like 2 weeks ago. It's like I just saw you.
Or you just saying,
I
exactly.
I remember talking to another INTJ a while ago, and he was basically saying that he likes being around other people, but he doesn't like having to talk to them. So, like, and I was like, yes, you like that their presence is there. Like, that they're just, you know that they're there. If you need them, but you don't feel obligated to talk
yes.
to them or entertain them or whatever it is,
it's
you know.
It's a thing that is called comfortable silence.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Which not everyone understands or appreciates anymore.
I can't even have any kind of, like, significant relationship with somebody who can't be comfortable in silence. That's, like,
exactly,
the most important part.
Yeah, exactly the issue I have. It was just like, yes, it would be nice, but I don't really want to have anything to do with them.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not really healthy, so.
A big strain for me.
I guess I will be single.
A big strain for me is when, and this isn't, I'm not even just talking about romantic relationships. I'm talking about, like, any relationships,
yes.
friendships or anything.
Well, that's what
somebody
I said.
Who wants to, when somebody calls me and, like, a text would have sufficed, you know, for this particular bit of information.
I have my phone on silent all the time because I don't want anyone to call me and then stress me out for the rest of the day because, oh my gosh, they called.
Oh, man. I mean, I know couples who are very happy. They're like, oh, we fell asleep on the phone together. I'm like, I could have been watching Netflix or something during that time.
You know, spending my time wisely.
And I'm talking about, there have been, like, people, mean, I really, really like to talk to them, but if there's no reason that you require the inflection of my voice for the same information to get conveyed, I prefer having, one, the opportunity to think about what I'm going to say, because I obviously stutter and stumble over my words when I'm speaking out loud. I prefer communicating through text. And also, it's easier to multitask and secretly watch Netflix while I'm talking to them.
See, I hate texting,
mm-hmm.
but I do like the
instant messaging.
Yeah, I like
I
being
that.
Able to, that's why I use WhatsApp, because I can have it on my computer, but at the same time, I'm like, sometimes I just have too many thoughts, or like, so much that I want to say, that I hate having to even type it out, and I wish that I could just talk to them face to face, but I don't like being on the phone, just in general, like, I don't want to text or call.
It's the worst of both worlds.
I'd rather be face to face with a person, but, you know, that's not always
because
possible.
You can't always read sarcasm in a text, and
yeah.
you put it there when it's not really there, and then it just leads
yeah.
to stuff.
I think also, it's just that my number one worst skill, as I brought out in the last podcast, is listening, and that's all a phone call is. I need to read it, like, a few times, and then I'll understand what you're trying to say. Sometimes people are talking to me on the phone, and then I'm like, what? After they've been talking for, like, 5 minutes. You know? But if I can't even see them, it's even worse, because it's just listening, and they expect my mind not to wander.
So, guys, what's your favorite part of Artsing?
Who, Artsing?
Who asked this question?
No, it's...
This entire list is Artsing.
Yeah, I was going to say that sounds like an Aston
because thing. It's Arts apostrophe
Artsing. Yeah, I was more intrigued by his choice of spelling it like that. Yes. That's not... I don't think that's what I would have gone with.
Is Artsing even a thing?
Artsing.
Artsing. Making art. Doing artful things.
Oh, yeah. Making art.
How do you do the art?
What is your favorite... Well, I feel like each of us have, like...
Our own art forms.
So, Bagel, you go first.
Okay. Probably color choice for me. Finding out what colors will complement each other, what will not, depending on if I really want high contrasting things, or if I just want it to blend all together. Because that's what I do, is I open my bins and just see color and pick out of that. That's my favorite part.
That is my least favorite part.
It gets very hard sometimes, but that can be very enjoyable.
I get very judgy about other people's color choices.
Oh, yeah.
But when it comes to making my own things, I like painting or animating or whatever it is I'm doing, the hardest part for me is choosing a color. And so I often just kind of like spin my finger around the wheel and land on a color. I'm like, oh, that's the color we're going with, because I just can't choose ahead of time.
Because that's, I think, what influences all my purchasing choices for me is just like, do I like that color or not?
Well, I mean,
and then I think about, you know, what is it made of and what will lend itself to this or that, but it's just like, ooh, pretty, purchase.
Tawny, what's your favorite part of Artsing?
I was going to go last. What's your favorite part of Artsing?
This terrified look just went across Asia's face.
I don't know. I've always liked making art my entire life, and I think it's always just been... Basically, two parts. One is I get, like, the urge to draw or something, or whatever, draw or paint or make an animation or whatever it is. I'll get the urge to do that. And then it's almost like I have two modes. One is where I just grab a pen and I start moving my hand on the paper and something comes out of it. The more rare mode is where I have an idea first, and then I have to plan out how I'm going to make that work. So it's almost like two different approaches to making art that I have. With animation, it's much more that. Like, I have an idea, and then I'm like, okay, you really have to think ahead with animation.
Yeah, there's not really a lot of free-form animation out there, is there?
No. With drawing, I kind of just start drawing. Even if I do have an idea ahead of time, I'm not actually the best at making sure that's what comes out on the paper. So sometimes people will be like, oh, wow, you drew that thing, and can you draw me? And I'm like, heck no, you think I even meant to draw this? I didn't mean to draw this. This is just what happened. And I was like, it didn't turn out too bad, so I posted it. But then the end part of making art for me is like, sometimes I make something and I'm really happy with how it came out, and usually that's an accident. Like, I can't predict what I'm going to be happy with or what I'm not going to be happy with. And so that's another favorite part, that really good feeling when you're like, I definitely improved while I was working on this, and this is better than anything I've made before. That's an awesome feeling.
When you're actually happy with what you've done.
So for me with art, there's a lot of problem solving involved, and I'm not really happy with it, yeah, unless it's an improvement on whatever came before. Because otherwise, I just feel like a kid coloring in a book, you know. Which, I mean, nothing wrong with that. I know a lot of people like adult coloring books now. But
I don't consider adult coloring books art. Like,
no.
That's just...
It's not.
You know, I've bought, like, all of them, and I'm never gonna do anything with them.
I like them. I like doing them because it's
more therapeutic
a
than
prettier
art.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I that's what they're meant for. Mm-hmm. And to me, It's like a pretty version of coloring in all the letters in like a magazine.
Yeah, I do that too.
Like filling the G's and the P's and the A's and the E's. Mm-hmm. It's like that, but it's making like, it pretty.
An individualistic paint by number.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I've never been very patient with coloring. Even when I was a kid and I had coloring books, I would be like, I would try to experiment and be more artsy with it, like as a 5-year-old. So I would color outside of the lines just a little bit and try to get all free flowy with it. And my mom was concerned. She was like, because she was like, I've taught you how to do this. You like, you color the line part first and then you can scribble the inside part. And Kiri, our other sister, she, you know, was coloring all inside the lines and everything. And my mom was like, something's wrong with this girl.
Like a good girl.
She can't color inside the lines. And I was like trying to explain, I can color inside the lines. I'm choosing not to. It's art, mother.
This is who I am.
I remember one time when I was like 6 or 7 too, I drew a tree with crayon and I just kind of drew like a green oval and a brown rectangle. I was making it really graphic and my mom was like, I know you know how to draw trees better than that. Like, where are the leaves? And I was like, it's a style. It was like the first time I ever used that argument. And it was like, my style wasn't influenced by any real artist. It was influenced by the fact that other kids around me drew things more like that. And it seemed kind of appealing to like, it almost seemed more soothing to try and draw things more representational than like, or more like symbolically than realistically. So I was trying something out. She thought it was representative of my actual skill or that I forgot my previous skills. I came from a family that really pushed your art skills, if that's not clear.
No.
Okay, what's next?
Did Tawny get to answer?
Oh, she wanted to go last, so I forgot about her.
Tawny, what's your favorite part of artsing?
Okay, we're done.
My favorite part of artsing, well, the reason I wanted to go last on this is because it's a very difficult question for me to answer because I have a lot of different things that I do that are artistic, I guess. Like, I play music, write music, I like to draw, I like to paint, and I obviously like photography, So kind of within all of those different things, it's different favorite parts, you know. With music, I think I was talking to Bagel about this earlier, but like it kind of became like a stress relief. I'm not going to stop calling you Bagel.
That's okay. So, it is my handle after all.
So
it's just promo.
Like for music, I think with all art, I do love that it's, like, a challenge. Like, it's a thing that you can continually get better at and try different styles. You know, with music, you can try different genres of music and each require, you know, like, a little bit of a change in skill. And I've always found it to be, whatever art I'm doing, to be a good stress relief, basically, because I can just concentrate really on that one thing and it kind of blocks out all the stressful thoughts in my brain, because I'm like challenging myself with one thing, and
so you get into a flow state.
Yeah, art is my flow state, I guess. Different kinds. With photography, I liked it because it kind of got me out and exploring and looking at things like in a different way. But my favorite part of photography is actually the editing and the color correcting. I love choosing colors, and
I can't choose. There's too many pretty ones.
I like taking something, like, in a photograph that, which, you know, is documenting real life, but turning it into something more artistic, so tweaking it to make it more, like, cinematic or larger than life, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think there's just kind of
see me trying to choose an Instagram filter. It's like, I go through all of them several times, and then I'm like, then I'd get tired of it, so I'm like, it's this one.
Yeah.
I was thinking pretty hard, like, what is my flow state? Because there's so many different interests I have. Like, what is it that gets me there? And I think the number one thing that gets me into a flow state is, like, when I've just found something new that I want to learn about, and I go into like a Wikipedia rabbit hole, and then time goes by like that.
My obsession of the week.
Yeah.
I think
taking in random knowledge.
Trivia.
More recently, coding has become like a flow state where I'll...
That's good, because that's essential for coding.
Like, I sit there and I will just work on something for hours and hours, you know, and I forget to eat, and I'm like, oh, it's 5 o'clock. I thought it was morning still, you know.
I just remembered the thing I wanted to bring up earlier when we were talking about your knitting and everything. Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you if you saw that video. Donnie knows what I'm talking about.
I'm not sure if I saw that video, but continue.
Sorry, well, I didn't even say what video it was.
That sounded a lot more judgy than it was meant to be.
Intuition.
I looked at her and said, no, it hasn't been that one.
Coding within knitting.
It's this woman, and she was really
interesting. I think you'd like it.
I think I've heard it referenced in other places, but I don't think I've actually seen it.
She was a coder first, right? And then she was learning how to knit, and then she started to realize that these knitting patterns are programs, basically. So she started knitting programs instead of zero and one.
That's why I find it really interesting, because I feel like we have very different hobbies. But we're both INTJs.
Yes.
And so, like, the root...
We're getting excited over here.
The root of those, like, hobbies that take us into... Or actually, I mean, those things that, like, take us into that flow state, basically, are the same, you know? Mm-hmm. Because for you, it's knitting. And for me, at least right now, it's coding. And it's... But it's the same. And it's like, problem solving and patterns and, like, coming up with algorithms and stuff like that, which is just really... fun. Although for me, I'm not that advanced of a coder, so I'm still like learning a lot. But you know, I just found that interesting.
What do you think is the difference between a flow state and like a meditative state? Because like, are they the same? Because for me, like I said, crocheting and crafting, it's not a passion of mine, but when I do start crocheting and I just, it's the same stitch over and over and over again. So it's just like a repetitive thing. And it's kind of like, I eventually zone out. And then when I close my eyes, I just see like the stitches. Mm-hmm. But then it was the same thing when I like played Candy Crush on my phone, you know, I close my eyes and I see Candy Crush. So that's almost like I'm killing my brain. Like I'm just completely zonked out and thinking about something else.
Wait.
And that doesn't seem like the same as a flow state where I'm being like productive and learning or writing or drawing or something like that.
I feel like that's just a really convenient way of zoning out. I don't know, like,
but I'm doing something.
Well, that's what I mean by convenient. You're kind of accomplishing
it. Also happened with Dance Dance Revolution. I would close my eyes and see the arrows.
I was thinking about that. That's like, it's an episode of Malcolm in the Middle where Hal is obsessed with Dance Dance Revolution and he starts to see it and he starts to respond
and Tetris.
Nod. Shake your head.
Yeah, that's true. It's the only exercise that ever got me into a flow state. You know, some people, for them, their flow state is running.
Yeah.
They, like, instantly...
Is it their flow state, though, or is that more like the crocheting, where it's just kind of a way to zone out because they're not...
It's their flow state because it starts going faster. They're relaxed. They're into it. They're not thinking about anything else, which is why running's so hard for me, because I start immediately thinking about everything else. Like, wow, this sucks. This is hard.
It depends, too, on what exactly it is you're doing, because I have specifically projects that are fairly easy for me to do. They're fairly simple, and that can help me think about things. Mm-hmm. Like what that noise was. And there are more things that are intentionally more complex so that I can focus on that as opposed to, you know, all of my issues. So it depends on what I'm ready to do, what I'm emotionally capable of handling that day as to what mindset I want to be in.
I'm sure we've all gone into a flow state when it comes to, like, reading.
I used to be able to do it in writing, but I haven't been writing a lot.
Yeah,
there's a book I read, and I cannot remember the name of it,
You had all that time while we were interrupting you to come up with a name.
And yet. So, but in the beginning of the book, it basically is talking about, like, the difference between us having to consciously do something, you know, even if we know how to do it, we still have to think about it versus other things that are, you know, just second nature. things that we can do without thinking about it. So I feel like that's kind of the difference between the flow state and, like, the meditated, what you were saying. Basically, like, in a flow state, it's, like, something that you're so involved in, but you still have to consciously think about what you're doing. And so you're really concentrating on that thing versus whatever else, it's like second nature, so you're just kind of doing it and it's repetitive and you already know how to do it. You can think about other things while you're doing it, because, like, I know with crocheting, you probably could be doing that while focusing on a show, you know, watching playing a game at the same time. So I feel like that's the difference, if whether it's second nature to you or not. So even if it's like the same thing, so like with knitting, if it's, like, a pattern that you don't know very well, you'd have to kind of go into flow state, you know, where you'd be, like, focusing on that, but you're learning at the same time, versus if it's one you already know, you're just, like, doing it.
I think you can go back and forth between those two states very easily.
I like how you intend Tawny to talk fast. I was just, when I was listening to this podcast about flow, they actually were specifically talking about INTJs at one point, and how a big thing that gets them in flow is, like, a requirement is isolation and being, you know, quiet. And this is actually true for me too, but it may be even more true for you. Like, I know when I try to go to bed, that's when my brain's like, let's think about everything now.
That's why I can't sleep.
But for an INTJ, if they haven't had any, like, time during the day where they were alone and, like, gave themselves that time to get into that flow and think, then the second they try to go to sleep, their brain's like, well, now's the time, because your brain wants to get into flow. And so they were saying INTJs tend to have a big problem with insomnia, because every time they're trying to sleep, that gives their brain the perfect opportunity to now go into flow and start thinking and
you
thinking.
You actually plan out the next 5 years.
Oh, you've just actually explained my whole life right now. So
It's true of me, too. I think the only difference, maybe why it's less severe for me, is because I'm an INTP though, and I'm always kind of like half of me is half gone and daydreaming or thinking about all those things. So when I lay down to sleep and my brain's still thinking, it's still kind of just a continuation, maybe a little more like concentrated, but a continuation of all the things I've been thinking about all day while I was only half paying attention to the external world. And I think you guys are better at focusing on what you need to do during the day.
I can.
Yeah.
When I'm working. Like, if I have to work all day, you know, and I'm busy throughout the workday, I'm going back and forth, I'm talking with different people, I'm, you know, just doing my job, basically, and focusing on that. And then, but I'm, like, exhausted the whole time I'm doing it, and then I'm like, oh, I'm so tired, and then I go to bed, and I'm like, oh, here's, like, the 10 million things I needed also to get done today, and for the next 5 years, you know, and let me think about all the conversations I've had since I was 3 years old. And
that embarrassing thing that you did 8 years ago.
Yeah.
I also give myself, I think, more time than I should, than most adults allow themselves. I give myself a lot of alone time and a lot of time to sit and think about stuff. That's just, my life allows for that at the moment, which is very important, I think, for my mental health. I know when I had to go to school, like, as a kid, oh my gosh, it was a nightmare, because you have to be aware of what's going on around you all the time and remember things. And that was very stressful for me, because my brain was constantly resisting. It wanted to think about other things all the time. Mm-hmm. So anyway, do we have time to ask, should we just save those other questions for the next podcast?
I think we should save those questions and move on to our announcements.
Yeah. All right. So just to review, this episode was kind of a bonus episode to make up for the fact that we missed January. So you get two episodes in the short month of February. And just in case you forgot, you're listening to Mostly Rational. That is the name of this podcast. Mostly Rational. Don't forget it. So there are a few different ways you can listen. If you want to listen to this one again, or you want to listen to our new episodes, you want to go back and listen to our old episodes, we are on iTunes. You can listen to us there for free. We are also on Podbean. If you go to mostlyrational.podbean.com, we are at 228 downloads on Podbean right now, which is surprising to me, actually. I know that doesn't sound like a lot, but it's surprising to me, because most people, when I say Podbean, they're like, what's Podbean? So I was like, oh, wow, 228 people. Wow, that's cool. And then I did go ahead, like I said, I was going to, in the last episode, make a new Patreon account for Mostly Rational only. So that's at patreon.com/mostlyrational. If you do decide to support us on Patreon, there are perks that go along with each tier, each level of support. And so that helps us out a lot. You have no idea. Plus, that also gets you able to hear our blooper reels and other bonus material that I'm putting up.
Yeah, all the junk we don't want you to hear, hey, you'll get to hear.
There's some good stuff. It's mostly the jokes that I was like, not everybody would like these jokes, but they're pretty good jokes. If it's not an option for you right now to become a patron, that's fine. But what really helps us out also is if you go to iTunes and like subscribe or a review or rating, that helps us get out there a little bit more. Or if you share with your friends, that also is very helpful. So just throwing that out there. As always, thank you to Tyler and Cassidy for your support on Patreon. If you would like your question to be answered in the next episode, there are a bunch of different ways you can submit questions. So here they are real quick. You can email us at mostlyrationalpod@gmail.com. You can direct message us on Instagram at Mostly Rational Podcast. You can tweet us using the hashtag Mostly Rational or send a message to us at Mostly Rational on Twitter. You can message us on Facebook or you can leave us a comment on any of those places if you don't mind your question being public. Thank you, Megan, for being a guest on our show. We appreciate you coming out here and bringing us the delicious coffee rum that helped us be social enough for this podcast.
We need all the help we can get, and thank you for asking me.
It was a good choice. All right, so we are going to end with one last question. This question was asked by our stepfather.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Michael, for this thought-provoking question. If I admit I'm fatter than someone, does that make me the bigger person?
And end music.
Yeah, I don't know how to respond to that.
I think it technically...
You don't need to respond to it, really.
There's no real answer
it's
there.
It's one he desperately wants to put on a t-shirt.
Okay.
So nobody steal that. Copyright, Michael.
Rodriguez.
Copyright. And while we're saying all these things, music will be playing over it, so it doesn't really matter what we say.
Well, in
laughter,
that case...
Laughter! Oh.